The book of Proverbs, chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. This is the word of God. Let us give our full attention and let us receive God's word in faith. My son, attend unto my wisdom and bow thine ear to my understanding, that thou mayest regard discretion and that thy lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of the strange woman drop as in honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldest ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger, and thou mourn at the last, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and assembly. Drink waters out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad, and rivers of waters in the streets. Let them be only thine own, and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breasts satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman, and embrace the bosom of a stranger? For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. His own iniquities shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of sin. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. This is the word of the Lord. This afternoon we are going to be looking at verses 7 through 14. But before we look at these verses, let us get the context from what we did last week, verses 1 through 6. We have again the call from the Father. The lips of the Father, if you will, are in view. And he's asked for his Son once again to give attention. But why? Well, two reasons are given why the Father ought to be heeded. So that the Son might himself treasure up wisdom and knowledge, and so that in the proper time, wisdom and knowledge might also be found in his mouth. So the lips of the Son are in view. So here we have the Father speaking to the Son to the purpose that in his season, the Son might also speak knowledge to his own children. But a mind and a heart and a mouth that is full of wisdom is very necessary, because there is another set of lips involved here. They are the lips of the strange woman. She is trying to seduce the young man and pull him out of the way. She is deceptive. Her words are sweet and smooth. Everything speaks of pleasantness. But the reality is this: although she speaks of sweetness, the end of the matter is always bitter. And although her words are smooth and you're wanting to enter into the world of her words, ultimately all you will find there is the sharpness of a sword that leads down to the grave. She is herself on the way to destruction, and she will take to destruction all of those that are connected to her. It only ends in one way: death, physical and spiritual. A question comes to us, however. To whom are we going to give our attention? The Father, the wise Father, or are we going to give our attention to the strange woman? this sounds obvious the way that the Father has framed it up. Of course you want to give your attention to the Father, because the strange woman is on the path to death. You don't want to be attached to her, and the Father speaks words that lead to life. All of this seems very obvious. But in our sinfulness, we have a natural inclination to want to follow after the strange woman. She speaks to us of pleasures that are very natural and come very easy to us. There's no effort involved in this, and certainly nothing that would cross us, nothing contrary to our inclinations. And so we are inclined to simply follow after her. And the lessons of the Father are difficult. Here he is always calling, attention, attention, attention. Why is he calling attention? Because it's hard to get my attention for these hard lessons. Stretching to the mind, these are wisdom lessons that only come through effort, difficulty. And more than that, his way of wisdom is also a way of righteousness, which is so contrary to my natural inclination. When we look at things in balance, considering our sinful nature, the tendency is going to be to follow the strange woman. That's easy. It's very natural. Following the Father and listening to his words are very difficult. And with that in view, the Father calls again in verse 7. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. So here he is calling again. Listen to me. And once you have listened to me, hold on to these wisdom lessons and do not let them go. But he has a particular wisdom lesson that he wants to communicate. And it's basically this. You remember Paul's system of sanctification. It always involves putting off a sin, but in its place putting on a specific form of righteousness to replace it. And here the Father would have us to put off sexual immorality. And he gives us a chief piece of counsel concerning putting off sexual immorality, and it's simply this: avoid the strange woman. Stay away from her. Verse 8. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house. Here he gives counsel, and he states it both positively and negatively. Here's something for you to do. Keep your path a long way away from that strange woman. She doesn't belong to you, and you don't belong to her. So set your feet in a different path. Stay away. But he also avoids it. He also explains it negatively, or gives something to be avoided. Do not go near the door of her house. So in some, stated both positively and negatively, it's stay away. Don't go over there. And there's good reason for this. Flip forward to Proverbs chapter 7. We will begin reading in verse 6 as the wise father develops this idea further. He draws something of upon his experience, something that he saw at one point. Proverbs chapter 7, verse 6. For at the window of my house I looked through my casement, and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner, and he went the way to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night, and behold, there met him a woman with the attire of an harlot and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lieth in wait at every corner. So she caught him. It's a fascinating passage here. You have the image of the wise father looking out of his window, and he sees a crowd of youth, simple ones, out there. And he sees one that is lacking in understanding, going down by the way of the strange woman. And it's proof positive that he lacks understanding, proof positive that he's a fool, that he's wandering over by her house. Because that woman is lying in wait for him. This is the way that she's portrayed. Here certainly it's somewhat figurative, but she is portrayed as like a crouching lion waiting for her prey, just waiting for him to walk down that way. And in verse 13, she caught him. She captured her prey. He wandered down by her den, as it were, and she captured him. Proof positive that he is a fool. What the fool does not understand is that the door that leads to her house is an entrance into her house, but there is no exit from it. This was the way that it was portrayed, you remember, back in chapter 2. Men check into her house, but they do not check out. You enter in upon her door, and the image is that her floor is funneled downward, and at the bottom of her floor is a grave. Death and hell await there. And so Solomon told us, her house inclineth unto death, and her paths unto the dead. None that go unto her return again, neither take they hold on the paths of life. So here he's relaying the true character. Don't go by her door. If you are a person of understanding, you won't go by her door, because having entered therein, her floor is sloped. And at the bottom of that slope is a grave that's waiting for you. So we have a duty set before us, something to be done, and that's avoiding the strange woman. And it's amazing to think how much sexual immorality would be avoided if we would just mind the path of our feet. You remember some time ago, in a different regard, I taught you about the nature of the will. Basically, the will is always determined by the strongest inclination of the heart. And one of the things that strengthens a motive is the liveliness of the idea of it in our minds. We use the image of a piece of cake. You know, we might not think we want the cake very much, but if you walk into the house and you smell it, the idea becomes more lively in the mind. And it becomes much more persuasive. And then you see it with chocolate all dripping off the sides, and you think, I like that. The idea of it is becoming more lively in the mind, and something dieters should never do. You think, I will just have a nibble, but having your nibble, the idea of it is more lively in the mind than ever. And before you know it, the chocolate cake, whatever your resolution might have been, has you. And so it is with sexual immorality. The closer the young man comes to her, the more lively she becomes in his mind. The more he dallies with it, the stronger the temptation becomes. But if you think that avoiding a brothel or avoiding a strip joint is all that there is to avoiding the strange woman, then you are not wise. That is just one aspect, and probably the most obvious aspect of avoiding the strange woman. But if we're going to be wise, we must know ourselves. John Calvin said that that was at the heart of all religious learning. We must learn who God is, and we must learn who we are. And in that, we will make progress in religious knowledge. And so I would tell you, you must know where your weaknesses lie. Because the strange woman is about us all of the time. We can't always avoid her in all of the ways that we might like to avoid her. But we must know our weaknesses. Everybody knows you avoid the brothel and you avoid the strip joint. But men, a great many of you work in mixed company. And the strange woman is present there. You spend a lot of time in the workplace, perhaps around women. We could wish that it were not so, but it is so. Spend a lot of time in that kind of environment. A man might, in an average day, find that he spends more time with the women at work, more waking hours with the women at work, than he does with his wife at home. And this can create a problem. And this is why I say, know yourself. It is perfectly lawful for you to be at work. But are you in danger? What's going on in your hearts as you are there? Do you find that you look forward to going and telling that co-worker this or that thing that you don't feel like you can tell your wife? Even common, everyday places that we don't normally associate with the strange woman can be places of danger. Again, it's perfectly lawful for you to be there. What's going on in your heart? And are you being faithful in avoiding the strange woman? You might go to the mall, or you might go to the newsstand, and it's perfectly acceptable for you to be there, perfectly lawful, but the strange woman is always trying to catch your eye. And so the question is, what is going on in your heart? Are you not only avoiding the strange woman, say, physically, but are you avoiding the strange woman mentally and emotionally, spiritually? If we're going to be wise, we must know ourselves and make sure that we are avoiding not only the obvious dangers, but the more subtle dangers that can creep up on us unawares. And before we know it, our heart has been ensnared in an inappropriate relationship. And this goes for women as well. It's well known, I guess, everybody takes it as a true thing, that women don't tend to be attracted by the eyes in the same way that men do. I guess that's generally true. Women could probably say whether that is true or not. But saying it's generally true doesn't make it true in every case. And so the question is, know yourself. Are you putting yourself in the way of temptation? Are you attracted by your eyes? And are you in places of danger? Because you will have relationships with men. You'll have relationships with the brothers in the body of Christ. You might see a grocer or a pharmacist every week, or a doctor that you see all the time. All of these things are perfectly lawful. It's perfectly lawful to be friends with these men. But the question is, know yourself. What's going on in your heart? Are you avoiding, in this case, the strange man? Do you find yourself thinking to yourself, it's so much easier for me to talk to that one than it is for me to talk to my husband at home? And before you know it, your heart has been ensnared and taken away from you. And so we must always beware. Remember what Solomon says about the strange woman. The strange woman has forsaken the companion of her youth and sought companionship someplace else, believing that it's more satisfying. And nobody starts on the way of sexual immorality, leaving the house to think, I'm going to get myself in trouble today. It always starts by degrees, and because we don't deal with sin in its first motions. And before you know it, it has you. And so women, you must also avoid the strange man, not just physically, but be careful that you're avoiding being ensnared mentally and emotionally. This is the wisdom of Solomon to us. And we must know ourselves and know when we are in danger. As we proceed in this text, the father fills his mouth with arguments to discourage disobedience. I told you to stay away from her, and let me tell you why. Verse 9, lest thou give thine honor unto others and thy years unto the cruel. The strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. And thou mourn at the last when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. If you will not listen, and if you go near her house, these are the negative consequences that await you. You're going to waste your vigor and your years. Verse 9. Lest thou give thine honor, could also be translated vigor, unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. This really highlights, the way this is framed up, really highlights the foolishness of getting ensnared in this way. Because here the young man is portrayed as giving his honor or his vigor away. Not that she took it from him, but that he is foolish enough to go in and give it to her. And the folly of it, the way that it's expressed here, it's very much like this. It's like the young man going into his mistress, spends all the time at her house, and say she needs her fence fixed and maybe her refrigerator. And he spends all of his vigor and his time there instead of at home, while his fence at home is in disrepair and the appliances are in need of work. He spends his vigor and he spends his time on her while his own house is in ruins. And isn't that a foolish thing? Here she's getting all of the benefit of the strength of his youth, and his own home is languishing away. He's foolishly spent his resources. And it's very interesting, also in verse 9, he spends his vigor and his years building up the house of the adulterous woman and her husband, who is said to be here the cruel one. Now, there's some ambiguity, and it's hard to say exactly whom he's speaking about when he mentions the cruel one, but I do think it's the husband. Look at chapter 6, verse 32. But whoso committeth adultery with a woman lacketh understanding. He that doeth it destroyeth his own soul. A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. For jealousy is the rage of a man. Therefore he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. I think he is the cruel one that is being mentioned here. Here this young man has been spending his vigor and his years in building up the adulteress's house, building up the house of her husband, whom, if he knew what this young man was doing with his wife, would not spare him. And you see the folly of it. He's building up a house that's actually hostile to him. But yet, if the husband, the man of the house, knew what was going on, he would not spare until the young man is destroyed. What foolishness. Do not be so foolish that you would waste the strength of your years and your vigor on such emptiness and vanity. Solomon will say in Ecclesiastes, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And if there is a vanity and an emptiness to be avoided, it would certainly be this one. In verse 10, it's not only a waste of his vigor and his years, it's also a waste of his material estate. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. So this foolish young man, not only has he wasted his strength and his years, but he brings all of his wealth, not to his own house, but to the house of the adulterous woman. He gives up the fruit of his labor and his working life to aliens, as it were, people that he doesn't have any business being with them, and they don't have any business being with him. And so his own house is portrayed as bankrupt, while he's given all of his strength and all of his years and all of his wealth to these foreigners. And again, to a man that would destroy him, the house of a stranger, that would certainly destroy him if he knew. And the end of it is always the same. It's bitter mourning and lamentation, verse 11. And thou mourn at the last, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. So here it is. The young man is portrayed. All your strength is used up. Your years are gone. No money. And now you know it. Your father tried to tell you, tried to warn you, and now you're completely spent and exhausted, and all you're left with is a lamentation that you should have listened and you should have heeded instruction while there was time. And this is the irony, and this is the bitterness of it. At the end, he does realize, but only after he is wasted, only after he is empty. Then he learns the lesson that his father would have told him in his youth, that his father did tell him in his youth, but he wouldn't listen. Most of us have known people that have been involved. Most of us will have known at least one person that was involved in this kind of a wasting adultery. But generally speaking, we might move in circles where we feel a long way away from this kind of wasting adultery that would sap someone of all their strength and all of their wealth. But we shouldn't get too comfortable, because we can all probably think of a lot of instances in our own life where sexual immorality in general, and more particularly a lack of faithfulness in marriage, has brought about all of these same kinds of woes, even if there wasn't like a gross form of adultery. Man just doesn't like that woman anymore. He just wants to go someplace else. Doesn't want this family. Decides he wants something else. But then what happens? He ends up spending his strength and his wealth into a family that is no longer his own. He might take up another family and have no responsibility for provision of two families. And we see the wasting away of a man's strength and a man's wealth in programs like alimony, child support, as he is always funneling his wealth and his strength and his ability and his time into a house that is no longer his own. And many men end up impoverished and bankrupt. And they find that the new wives that they've taken are bitter. We do not like the fact that all of the money is being spent into a family that is no longer our own. But you might also think of the mourning that comes as families continue to break down all around us. It might not be, you know, the really gross form of adultery. It just might be sexual immorality in general, marital unfaithfulness in general. But broken homes and the lamentations that come out of them, all of the hurt and the loneliness and the jealousy and the bitterness, this lamentation has been offered up by many. And this touches almost all of us in some way, and probably quite profoundly. Many of us come out of homes like this. We'll have siblings whose homes have broken down in this way. There's nothing there but wasting and mourning. Wasting and mourning. How much better off we would be, and how much wiser if we would just adhere to God's plan to cling fast to the wife of our youth and to be faithful to her all of our days and enjoy all of the pleasures and happiness that come from observing God's order in the world. We cannot be happy by trying to buck God's order. This is God's creation. We cannot invent another way of doing it that's going to lead to happiness. God will see to it. And men in particular, I would warn you, we must be careful not to be taking other kinds of mistresses. It might not be women, as it were, but other kinds of mistresses that can lead to the same kind of ruin. And I think in particular of our work. Now, I don't know that there might not be some man here that I would have to admonish to work harder than he does. But as a congregation, I don't think that that is our problem. Generally speaking, as a congregation, our men work many, many hours, probably too many hours. And you need to ask yourself, am I spending my vigor and my years building up the house of another man, building up his wealth, while my house, even though I bring a few dollars home, is impoverished and is lying in a spiritual ruin? Is the house of another consuming our years? We need to make sure that we are bringing our vigor and our strength home with us. And too often we have bought into what I think is perhaps an old American idea, which is, if I make provision, material provision for my family, I've done my duty. And if I do anything else, it's bonus because I'm extra special, virtuous. I think more of us have bought into that than we would care to admit. And we like to console ourselves and say, well, Paul said that if I don't take care of my family financially, then I'm worse than an infidel. I'm taking care of them, so my job is finished. But hear me, Christian man. You have the duty to do not only that, but to care for their spiritual estate as well. And that with faithfulness, bringing your vigor and your years home with you to build up that spiritual bank account in your family. Do not be a reductionist in your duties and think, you know, I've provided for the family. What man is going to blame me? Maybe no man will. But when you lose your wife and your children spiritually, you might find yourself also taking up this lamentation at the end. What a fool I have been to give my strength and my vigor to a house that was not my own, while my house lay in ruins, while my wife and my children suffered. They suffered hurt and they suffered loneliness and they lacked my guidance. Because I will tell you another true thing. Christian man, there is no substitute for you in your home. You can delegate certain duties to your wife, but there is no substitute for you in your home. And so, by all means, make competent material provision for your families. It's your duty. Do not neglect it. But do not use that as an excuse for neglecting your spiritual duties in your home. Because even though no man might blame you, you can be sure that God on the last day will be examining with respect to all of your duties. We are reminded in this very text that although these kinds of sins often take place in secret where nobody else's eyes ever see and nobody ever knows, God's eyes are upon the ways of these men. He's watching and he's discerning their paths. So we have this general exhortation, avoid her house, stay away. But then we have another one. It's contained in the lamentation of the fool. The fool actually realizes what would have delivered his soul. Fleeing, yes. But where did I hear about fleeing? Verse 12. How have I hated instruction and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. How pathetic this mourning is. To say they told me, and they told me, and they told me, and I thought that I was wiser than my parents and wiser than my instructors. I thought I did not need to listen to them. And now here I am. I'm already ruined. In this, there's an implication that heeding the instruction of faithful parents and teachers is a way of escape. The father already told him, flee. That's how you're going to escape. Flee. I've uncovered the snare. Don't fall in it. Go in the other direction. It's really that simple. And a lot of ethical things are more simple than we like to lay it out. But flee from it and you'll be safe. The only question now is obey or disobey. Are you going to flee from it? Or are you going to take it into your bosom and dally with it for a little while? In which case it is going to destroy you. Obey or disobey. It's really that simple. And you see how merciful the Father is, even with his hard instruction. Flee from sexual immorality, which brings such great guilt. Flee from a sexual immorality that will be nothing but pain and heartache and waste and ruin for you. Wasting your strength, years, and wealth in the house of another. And fathers and teachers are great for giving this kind of instruction because they have greater experience, greater biblical knowledge. They've seen these things in their lives. Children have not lived long enough to see this pattern repeated. But you get some years and some length of days on you and you begin to see this pattern coming out in the history of the world. A young man that thinks, hey, mouth of this strange woman sure is sweet and sure is smooth and everything looks pleasurable. But we have lived long enough to see that the end of the matter is always mourning and lamentation. A person that has been wasted, and it always ends in this regret. I should have listened. I cannot tell you how many times in my own life that I've looked back and thought, I should have listened. I should have listened. They told me. Could have avoided this mistake. Could have avoided this guilt. I could have avoided the shame. I could have avoided this pain, but I did not listen. Frequently, God in his mercy will send, we see this over and over again in Kings and Chronicles, he'll send that prophet, as it were, to tell you, be careful in the way that you're going. It's a way that leads to ruin. But we see it also over and over again. Kings won't listen. Get angry at the prophets, but they end up in the ruin that's been prophesied. This is wisdom. Listen to your parents. Listen to your teachers and avoid the snare. But there is a subtle snare here for the young. Because the young are always assuming that their parents don't understand. And especially when they get into their teenage years and they're old enough to desire a relationship with that man or that woman, as the case may be. Now they're getting into those years where these things become very interesting indeed. And they'll think, my parents don't understand my desire for that person. Parents are cold-hearted. They haven't experienced this like I'm experiencing it. I have such a strong desire. But listen to the word of God. Here Solomon's telling you. Your parents and your teachers know better than you. But also, listen to experience and to reason. You think that your parents don't understand what it means to desire somebody in that way? How do you think you got here? They know all about that kind of thing. They know all about it. And with length of days comes the wisdom and the knowledge to exercise those great and precious gifts that God has given us wisely and well, rather than in a ruinous manner that does nothing but hurt and harm us. In verse 14, the fool finally sees the end of the matter. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and assembly. So he would not listen to the word. He would not listen to his parents and teachers with their greater experience. Here, this word translated almost could also be translated soon. And I think that the context demands something more like soon. Because you do not get the feeling that this young man has escaped from the evil. He's lamenting the fact that he's already been wasted and ruined. It's not like, ooh, those evils almost came upon me, but just almost, I did escape out of this snare. Rather, soon fits the context so much better. Soon I found myself in all evil in the midst of the congregation. My father had warned me. I pursued the relationship with the strange woman anyway, and soon I found that all of the evils that he warned about had come upon me. I found that my strength was wasted, my years, my substance, that I had taken all of that precious wealth and material and I had taken it to the house of a stranger. And then her father discovered it, her husband discovered it, and I found that he would not spare me. And the image here is of a man who has been publicly exposed. Not only do I have all this waste and ruin, but I thought I was doing these sins in secret, and now it's been laid in front of the entire congregation in the assembly. It almost sounds like a courtroom scene, like the cruel one has caught up with him and taken him in front of the magistrate for his adultery. So soon he found himself in the midst of every kind of evil, in the midst of the congregation and the assembly. It's a public humiliation and a public scandal that has come. And for anyone that might have struggled with this in their life or known somebody that has, those sins that we commit in secret are frequently exposed. And the public infamy that attaches to them, as we saw in chapter 7, lasts and lasts and lasts. People do not forget these kinds of sins. Many things they will forgive and forget, and the memory will grow dull. But this kind of public scandal, people remember. And this can dog your steps for a long, long time, and maybe for a whole life. Think of that great and godly King David and how this infamy never left him. Where even as the writer of Kings is remembering David, and he said, and this king did like David, and that's great, or this king did not do like David, and that's great. But he still remembers. He said, and David did righteously, except in the matter of Bathsheba. And it's remembered, and it's remembered. It dogs him his whole life. And then for centuries afterwards, his failure with Bathsheba is remembered and remembered. If you would gain wisdom, learn the lessons from the life experience of other people. Do not repeat these hard lessons in your own. Listen to the word of God as it comes to you through the mouth of your parents and teachers. Stay away from the strange woman and let this kind of sexual immorality not even be named among us, as St. Paul says. Let us pray.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3000 3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's E-D-M-O-N-T-O-N, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."